Today we'll be talking about stability of gap quantum matter and error correction with adiabatic noise. Go ahead, Ali, if you're ready.
Okay, thanks. So first of all, thank you for inviting me to give this talk. So this is a work we put out on archive a couple of months ago. This is in collaboration with Sagar Vijay here at UC Santa Barbara. This is a happy picture of him. And this is the archive identifier if you're interested to learn more about this work. Just let me ask, could you see my pointer on the screen? Like, is that something that I can use? Okay. So this is a very...
And you're okay in the middle of the talk?
Sorry, say again?
Are you okay with questions in the middle of the talk?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Feel free to interrupt whenever, if there was any question. So there are too many words in the title, so let me just unpack them one by one and try to explain what this is work about, what this work is about. So let me start by just describing two notions of stability, which are kind of relevant to this work. One is the stability of kind of gapped quantum matter from the condensed matter viewpoint, where when we talk about the stability of a system in condensed matter quantum like community, we usually mean something like a stability of gap, energy gap, or something like ground state degeneracy. So to have a concrete example in mind, consider some like topological Hamiltonian like Torrey code, which I here denote by zero, and then adding some local perturbations, VI, where I add some perturbation on each side, or like some neighborhood of each side. And there's the perturbation strength is kind of given by J. And if you look at the energy spectrum of this, so you have this perturbed Hamiltonian HJ. If you look at the energy spectrum of this Hamiltonian, at J equals zero, you have some set of energy states and some ground state degeneracy. But when you turn on J, tune J to some non-zero value, this kind of eigenenergies turn into energy bands. But if this Hamiltonian is zero is inside a phase or some represented stable phase of matter, what we mean is that when you turn J to some non-zero value, the energy gap above the ground state remains non-zero in the thermodynamic limit. And the ground state degeneracy is kind of also restored in the thermodynamic limit, meaning that the lowest energy band, the width of the lowest energy band goes to zero in the thermodynamic limit, which basically means the ground states remain degenerate there. So this is kind of the notion of the stability when we say what we mean by stability of the gap quantum matter. And this notion of the stability is kind of relevant to or basically defines the notion of quantum phase of matter. When we say there's a quantum phase of matter, this is what we mean. So again, going back to the Torrey code example, let's say this H Torrey code is the clean Torrey code, like a star Plaquette operator Hamiltonian, and then you add some transverse and longitudinal magnetic field to the Hamiltonian. You can see that if this magnetic fields are kind of weak enough, there is this extended topological phase around the Torrey code where all the universal properties of the Torrey code carry over here, but if these magnetic fields are strong, there's a phase transition, which of course coincides with the gap closing of this Hamiltonian where the universal properties are lost. So this is one notion of the stability that is kind of familiar to all of us. Then there's this other notion of stability, which is also kind of related, relevant to Torrey code and topological Hamiltonians, and that has more to do about with recovery of quantum information. And the setup is a little different. Let's say it's a scale, consider the Torrey code, but now you have a state, an arbitrary ground state in the Torrey code, which you can think of as some encoding some quantum information, where this phi one and phi two are two logical states of the Torrey code. And then some noise channel happens with some probability p, you flip some of the qubits. And like Tory code is error correcting code, or like the, is it kind of a stable quantum memory in some sense, in the sense that there exists some recovery channel such that you can recover the original state, the encoded state, by applying that recovery channel on this noisy state. And this recovery channel in the Tory code is basically you measure the stabilizers, you find some anions here and there, and then kind of like annihilate them by just kind of applying some feedback to move them together. And then, like, go ahead.
Do you need a recovery map to be local?
So not necessarily. And then for Tory code, like, if you want to just do it in one shot and like, assuming you have perfect measurements, I don't think it can be local. But yeah, for now, I'm kind of keeping everything very like vague and arbitrary. So the question is whether there is a recovery map or not. I will restrict the recovery map a little bit in the few next slides. But for now, I'm just saying whether there is a recovery map at all. It could be completely non-local, weird, like unitary that turns the state back to the original state. And so then this notion of basically a stability is related to the existence of non-zero error threshold for this recovery task. So for the Tory code, we know if this bit flip is like less than, I don't know, 10% or something, that the bit flip rate is less than 10%, you can always like recover the original state using this maximum likelihood decoder. So there is this two notion of a stability. One is kind of like more relevant to condensed matter viewpoint about Tory code or like topological codes or like gapped Hamiltonians. And then there is this other kind of notion of a stability which comes from the quantum information side. One is about the existence of kind of extended phase, and the other is about the existence of like non-zero error threshold. And kind of the broadly speaking, the goal of this work or this program is to explore the connection between these two notions of a stability. The notion of existence of extended phase and the existence of a non-zero error threshold for some like error model or noise process. This work is mainly kind of like exploring this direction. So we assume, and I will kind of like make it more precise in the next slide, but for now, just let me give you a big picture about this stuff. So we assume there's a like extended phase in the condensed matter kind of like language. What does it say about like how is this extended phase, extended gapped phase, is related to the error correction task that like is relevant to the fixed point Hamiltonian? But the other direction I think is also very interesting, and I think one hope or motivation for this work was that maybe if we understand this direction better, we can say something about the other direction. And the reason the other direction is interesting, I mean, so I will motivate this direction further when I make it more precise, but the other direction is also interesting. And the reason it is interesting is that we have this like many examples of quantum error correcting code, like this recent construction, the QLDPZ construction, for which we know there is some decoders and there is a non-zero error threshold for some like local noise, like depolarizing noise or stuff like that. But we really don't have any idea about whether they represent a gapped phase of matter, like because mainly because all of these like new constructions are like, none of them are local constructions, so that you cannot just put them on some Euclidean lattice. So if it would be interesting if they do represent a gap space of matter, because then you have like this new notion of like in some sense K local phases of matter, which can be can have a lot of like exotic new novel properties which we don't see in usual condensed matter systems. But so far I think this question is open whether they represent the gap phase of matter or not. There are some kind of relevant works in this direction as well, And I just listed that this is a very kind of incomplete list of works that are kind of exploring this connection. Maybe I should like highlight this recent, but maybe not that much recent anymore, by Tibor and Vedika, which kind of like try to explore this other direction by relating the QLDPC kind of Hamiltonian to some notion of like gauge theory, and try to kind of build on that intuition and say something about the existence of this. But anyway, so I think this is an interesting area to explore, and this work is kind of try to kind of consider part of that connection. So to more concretely, what we really want to ask in this work is that, for again, like let's turn back to the phase diagram of the torque. Is there a way, what we want to know is that whether there is a way to view this like topological phase of the torque code as an error correcting phase where the recovery task succeeds, and then viewing the trivial phase as a non-error correcting phase where the recovery kind of task fails. So this is basically what we want to do, and to make this well defined, we need to first define a noise channel. What's the noise channel under which this error correction succeeds? And what is the noise channel that did this error correction fail? There was a question.
Yeah. Do you consider gapless space as well?
No. Here is completely like gap phase. That's an interesting question. And there are like, so the basically gapless phases in some sense are more relevant for subsystem codes. So here, we are considering just the usual stabilizer codes, and they are representing gapped phases of matter, at least for like the when you are talking about local stabilizer codes. But yeah, that's a very interesting question to see what is kind of the similar question one can ask in the gapless space. But here we are assuming, like basically we want to see if this gapped phase can be understood in terms of like error correction.
Ali, one more question from me. So
go ahead.
The gaps that can possibly have an error correcting phase is presumably some kind of an ordered phase, right? Like either topologically ordered or
So
I guess this is a trivial example where there is no corresponding error correcting phase for like a symmetric graph phase or a parametric phase. So it's not obvious that. Like, how does the order play a role in the error correction?
How that order enters in the error correction thing? I will talk about that later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, like, also I should say that, so there are some gap phases that you cannot think of, you cannot think about in the error correction sense that I want to talk about. If, for example, if they don't have a ground is a degeneracy, like a SPT phase on a closed manifold. In some sense, like, yeah, you cannot talk about error correction in that example. But so I'm not saying that you can always do that. But if the system has some like ground is a degeneracy, I will explain how we can think of them in terms of error correction. And for the like cement, like, one of the examples we consider, and I will talk about this a bit later, is like the Ising model. And then there you can see that the order parameter kind of gets related to, becomes related to the success of the decoder in an interesting way. So yeah, to kind of make this notion well-defined, like the gap, what we mean by whether we can see the topological phase as the error correcting phase, we need to define this noise channel. And the noise channel, which is kind of relevant to this notion, is this adiabatic noise channel, which I now explained. And this is basically the setup we consider in this work. So let's, again, consider some error correcting code or some local stabilizer Hamiltonian, which you write it as just some of the stabilizers of the code. And let's say this is H0, and H lambda and consider some like perturbation around a family of perturbation around this fixed point Hamiltonian. And the perturbation is kind of parameterized by this lambda. For example, in this figure, you have like two parameters, lambda one and lambda two, and then you have some phase diagram on this matter phase diagram corresponding to that. And let psi be some arbitrary state in the grounded state of this fixed point Hamiltonian. So that H0 could be the toric code and psi is some arbitrary superposition of different toric code grounded states. Now that somebody comes in and like tunes this value of lambda. So we asserted that this like lambda equals 0 point, the fixed point. And someone comes in and tunes the value of lambda adiabatically through some like along some path gamma to some non-zero value lambda star. Doing that, we'll impose this like adiabatic unitary evolution on top of this state psi. So it transforms the state psi, which I call like the coded space or coded state or the original encoded state, into some noisy state psi tilde, which is just simply u gamma times psi. So this process, I would call then, when this happens, this is when an adiabatic error has happened. So adiabatic error or adiabatic noise is basically some adiabatic drift inside the phase. And now the question is whether if I get this noisy state, this state that is evolved adiabatically under this, like along this path, whether I can recover the original encoded state through error correction. And this is how I hope that I can view this phase as an error correcting phase. So yeah, I think now I have explained like basically every term in the title, so I can explain what this work is about. So basically you have this state, you encode some quantum information in the grounded state of the fixed point Hamiltonian, some adiabatic drift happens, the state becomes some other state inside the phase. And now we can ask whether we are asking whether you can recover or reverse this adiabatic thing using error correction. And it turns out that like it is important to kind of like specify whether the decoder, whether when you want to kind of recover the state, what's the information you are giving to the decoder? What's the input to the problem? If you assume this adiabatic path is known or not known, these are two different situations. If you assume that the adiabatic path is known, then it is clear that you can always kind of reverse this process by just applying U dagger, because this is a unitary thing. And you know the path gamma, so you know that you, in principle, you can construct this unitary operator and apply its inverse to kind of find the psi. So it kind of becomes trivial if you know the adiabatic path and if you don't restrict the decoder. However, like if it becomes still a non-trivial question, if you restrict the decoder to be the usual way we decode quantum error plating code, meaning by just measuring the stabilizers of the code and applying the Pauli feedback. So the first statement we kind of consider in this work is that, let's say you are given this noisy state, which is the adiabatic like image of the code state, and you are giving the information about the path that it took. But now the question is whether you can recover psi by just measuring the stabilizer and applying Pauli feedback. This is kind of like relevant because usually like there's this conventional wisdom in condensed matter community that like if, for example, again, going back to the toric code example, if somebody like perturbed the toric code, what happens is that you will create like some E and anions here and there, but they're kind of sparse. So if you just measure the stabilizers to find the anions and then connect them together, you can always come back to the kind of original state. So this statement one, in some sense, is our effort, like our kind of version of formalizing that kind of conventional vision. And so I'm not claiming that this statement one is true or even statement two is true. I'm just like putting them out, and then the work is basically trying to see if they are true or not, and basically under what conditions they can be true. So this is when you know the decoder has the knowledge about this path gamma. But if you don't have the knowledge about the path gamma, the kind of right mathematical structure to think about this is kind of like a quantum channel where you have some probability distribution over different paths, which here is denoted by P gamma. So you can think of that like you start with in the fixed point Hamiltonian, but then randomly you end up somewhere in the phase, which you don't know. So basically, you apply this quantum channel, which is like an ensemble of different adiabatic errors. And now we can ask whether you can recover psi or not. And in this statement two, we don't restrict the decoder, because now it's even if you are allowed to do anything you want, it is still a non-trivial task to recover the original state. So the statement two, we basically ask whether in principle, it is possible to reverse the adiabatic kind of noise channel using any type of decoder, non-local measurement, whatever. So these are the two statements that are kind of considered in this work. The first half of the work is about the statement one. The second half is about the statement two. Just to give you a kind of like upshot of what was the result. What we found was that for the statement one, we looked at some specific examples that we can do numerics or analytic, like we can kind of consider analytically. And what we found about the statement one was that in both examples that we considered was that this statement one seems to be true as long as gamma is inside the phase. And so you can always kind of correct this adiabatic evolution just by measuring the stabilizers and applying a specific Pauli feedback, like a proper Pauli feedback, as long as you're inside the phase. So in some sense, like the error correction threshold for this statement one, in the examples we looked at, coincides with the phase condensed matter phase boundary, which is interesting. But we don't know what is the general situation, so we leave that open. And about the statement two, first we by using kind of like a simple counterexample, we show that this error correction threshold usually happens inside the phase. So it's not necessarily, it's not true necessarily that we can always kind of reverse this noise channel, even if all the, like this, even if you're guaranteed to remain inside the phase. But like there, like in certain situations you can. And we kind of drive some sort of like Neil-Loftman conditions for approximate quantum error correction that kind of tells you whether you can do it or not. But these are kind of like, I think that's the very short summary of the work. That's the heart of the work. And if you are going to, like take one thing from this talk is basically what is this talk about and what are the roughest statements that we are making in this work. If there's no question, I can just like now try to explain some of these results in more detail. Okay. So let me consider the first statement one, basically. And for that, consider the repetition code or the Ising 1D transverse field Ising chain. So consider this Hamiltonian. There is a question in the chat. Let me read it for people who don't see the chat. What if the encoded state is entangled with something else? So if the encoded state is entangled with, like, I think what is meant here is like entangled with some reference state or something outside the system. So it doesn't matter for the statement one, basically. Even if it is entangled, like the adiabatic. I see. So they clarify that if the logical qubit is a part of a larger computation, it needs to preserve its entanglement as well as the local state. And that's true. So if let's say this psi is just part of some bigger entangled state, For the statement one, you have this adiabatic path. I mean, for both of them, basically, that's basically what you consider. But for statement one, again, you have this adiabatic evolution happening. And you have this unitary that is applied just on this state, on this part of the state. Again, if you don't restrict the recovery channel, you can always like recover the original state with the entanglement by just applying U dagger. Like clearly this unitary evolution doesn't destroy the entanglement with the other like part of the system. If you have the if you restrict the decoder to be this stabilizer measurement quality feedback, we are still in some sense our result shows that that entanglement is still preserved, because basically you can show that the coherent information is preserved under this process. So that's also like in the example that I said that you can recover the original state, the entanglement is also recovered if it is entangled to other part of the system. And that is basically because the decoder recovers the original state without for any arbitrary state in the coded space. And if that is true, if the decoder can recover any arbitrary state in the coded space, then it means that it also can recover without using the information about the encoded states, of course. Then it means that actually it always can recover the entanglement with the result, with some other part of the system as well. For statement two, the same is true, but the statement two, basically we are looking at to kind of consider to find this new law form condition that I said, we actually look at the coherent information. So by design, we are actually exactly asking the question that you are asking. And again, in the examples we have, we show that there is a finite neighborhood that this entanglement is preserved, or the entanglement with the rest of the system or some reference state or some other part of logical space is preserved under this. There is a recovery process that preserves that. But yeah, that's a very important question. Thanks for pointing that out. So let me briefly just kind of explain our result in a little bit more detail. So for the statement one, consider this Ising, the 1D transverse field Ising model. So the Hamiltonian is given by this. The first term is just Zi, Zi plus one. These, you can think of this as the stabilizers of the repetition code as well. And then this G is the coupling to some external transverse magnetic field. When G is zero, we are in the fixed point Ising Hamiltonian or repetition code space. And the phase diagram for this Hamiltonian is very well known. When G is less than one, we are in the ferromagnetic phase, which is kind of where we have two degenerate ground states. One of them is symmetric, the other is anti-symmetric. And there is a finite gap above them. And then if G is bigger than one, we go, there is a phase transition at G1, G equal to one, to a paramagnetic phase. So now, what we consider is that, let's say you start, for example, in the up, or oil spin up state, which is a state in the ground state of clean Ising model here at G equals zero. And you can think of that as just equal superposition of the plus kth state and minus kth state. And this G, which I denote by GAZ plus and GAZ minus, and these are kind of the logical X plus and logical X minus states of the repetition code. So you have this superposition. Then somebody turns on G to some non-zero value adiabatically. So you go from this clean state to some noisy state or some deformed state, which is given by UG times psi. So it's somewhere in along this line, either here in ferromagnetic phase or paramagnetic phase. And now we want to ask whether I can recover this state by just measuring the Z, ZZ stabilizers and applying some Pauli feedback. So when you measure this ZZ stabilizer, you will see some domain walls. And to go back to the coded space, you want to kind of destroy this domain wall by matching them. And there aren't many ways you can do that. It's just probably reasonable thing to do is just to apply to choose the, so there are basically two ways you can match the domain walls, and one of them has kind of the lower, smaller weight, like the feedback you are applying has a smaller weight, so you kind of match the each domain wall to the closest one, in roughly speaking. And so that's basically what we considered here, which you can think of this recovery as just minimum weight perfect matching for this repetition code. And first we did the numeric for that. So the good thing about this is that this is kind of like free fermion. Everything is kind of Gaussian. So you can do free Gaussian numerics. I mean, it is, technically speaking, it's not Gaussian because the Gaussian states have definite like parity, but this state has like is a superposition of two states with different parities. But like you can just, if the state you are considering is the superposition of few Gaussian states, you can still do Gaussian numerics in the same way that like you can do Clifford like a stabilizer simulation if your state is the superposition of few number of the stabilizer states. So anyway, so you can do the numerics, and what, by doing the numerics, we find that actually by just doing this minimum weight perfect matching, you always recover the original state up to the phase boundary, G equal one, where the ferromagnetic to paramagnetic phase transition occurs. And so basically when you are in the G less than one, in the thermodynamic limit, this is like different system sizes. And this is the kind of average fidelity of the recovered state. You always recover, the fidelity goes to one, so you always recover the exact state you started with. But then when you pass the phase transition point, the fidelity drops below one. And then we kind of provide some analytical argument why this happens. And like at the heart of that, you can show that when you measure, and this is where like I was going to mention this order parameter. So when you measure this Zi, Zi plus one, the stabilizers of the repetition code, you are basically measuring the order parameter of the ferromagnetic phase. So the ferromagnetic phase is this like kind of characterized by this non-zero value of Zi, Zj when I and J are far from each other. So when you measure all Zi, Zi plus one in the state, in the system, you can also measure using that measurement outcome, so the measurement result, you are also can infer the value of Zi, Zj, or I greater than J. And you can show that like the kind of error that you infer when you want to kind of match the domain walls, the error you infer, the weight of that error is given by this formula here, where M is the magnetization, like Zi, Zj, when I and J, the order parameter of the phase. So it says, and you can see that when you are in the ferromagnetic phase, this M is bigger than zero. So it says that the weight of the error that you infer is kind of less than one half because it's less than one. Or in some sense, the error, like the size of the error is less than half of the system, or in another way, in other words, the error rate is less than one half, which is the error threshold of the repetition code. And that's kind of why you can always correct to the exact state perfectly in the ferromagnetic phase. So go ahead.
If I perturb the model by some Z2 symmetry breaking perturbation, then the two phases are no longer distinct. Then what's the error threshold?
So yeah, so here, I mean, when you have symmetry breaking, so we don't have any phase anyway. And the error correction task kind of fails as well. And to see that, and that's basically because when you add like symmetry breaking phase, you no longer, the ground state degeneracy is already lifted. So you don't have the degenerate ground state anymore. And if the ground states are not degenerate, this adiabatic evolution, just because of e to the power of IHT, it will impose a relative phase between the different code states, because they now have different energy states, different energy eigenvalues if you add a symmetry breaking perturbation. And that relative phase in the from the viewpoint of like quantum code is a logical operation. And it's kind of like unlikely that you can reverse that logical operation by just measuring stabilizers and applying some feedback, because like the stabilizers don't know anything about the logical information in the state. So if you have symmetry breaking perturbations, first you don't have a gapped phase anymore, and the recovery process also fails. So in some sense, they are consistent to each other there as well. But yeah, here to have a phase, we consider kind of like symmetric, like perturbations in this example. But yeah, like in general, we are more like interested in more generic like perturbations. For example, the toric code when there is no restriction on the perturbation. So the second example we actually consider is the toric code. We kind of course prefer to not seem. Sorry, there was a question.
Important question that was asked. See, suppose you have non-adiabatic perturbation like the longitudinal magnetic field. It collapses mm-hmm. a short track. So it's a system when you want to do quantum computation with real physical spin chains, because the external magnetic field will very often collapse it. It's no more adiabatic. That's why you go to superconducting chains, P-wave superconducting chains, where this doesn't mm-hmm. happen. So I just wanted to make it's a very important issue.
I see.
Physical spin, because the external magnetic field easily collapse a cat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, that's so a good point. Like technically, even from the theoretical, like, so that's true. We consider this example just as a kind of warm up. It is true that like if it wants to be practical, we should come either you should consider codes or just like phases which you don't have this restriction, because well the noise in nature is not symmetric. So there is one way of doing that is probably what you described, or just like in another way is just use another code which doesn't like whose stability is not kind of depends on symmetry.
Thank you. Another question.
No, thank you. Go ahead.
Suppose I consider Z2 symmetric perturbation, but non-local perturbations. Depending on how fast the non-local perturbations decay, I think there's a regime where this symmetry breaking phase is still stable. In that case, what is the error threshold?
So this is kind of like here we only consider like these two examples basically analytically. We consider another example which is not like exactly solvable, but it is local still. So if I want to make a statement, I should say I don't know what happens there, but my guess is that still if you look at the arguments we give, it seems kind of like those arguments more or less generalizes to any as long as like this general perturbative arguments hold, which I think holds when you have this, for example, this power law interactions with like fast decaying tails, I think the one that you're referring to. I think all of those arguments holds. And so based on that, I guess the error threshold would be still exactly at the error threshold where the ferromagnetic phase like disappears. But yeah, I cannot say for sure. That's kind of like a part of this open question that I mentioned, that like whether this is whether generally you can always error correct throughout the phase or not. We didn't really consider that, but yeah, my intuition is that you can still correct up to the phase, like even if you have none, because it is important that this adiabatic noise are coherent like noises which are actually very non-local. Like it's U that you are applying on the coordinate space. It's a very non-local unitary. It's not just local unitaries of this stuff. So I don't think that like whether this adiabatic evolution is generated by local Hamiltonian or non-local Hamiltonian makes a big difference. My guess is that you can still like recover up to the phase boundary, but yeah, I cannot say for sure. So yeah, the second example we consider is basically the toric code. But again, for the toric code, you don't have a symmetry restriction. But again, like, it's hard to consider arbitrary perturbation because, like, you cannot do numerics and you cannot do analytics. So instead, we looked at this very weird perturbation, which is like, so this is the toric code Hamiltonian, then you have this parameter beta, which is, you can think of it as just perturbation as a string, where for each vertex or for each star, you apply this e to the power of z1 times z2 plus z2 plus z3, and like the z around the star. So this specific Hamiltonian has been considered like 10, 15 years ago in studying this conformal quantum criticalities. The good thing about this perturbation, so for a small beta, you can see that this is toric code under like transverse magnetic field. But for a small beta, but for like the good thing about this specific form of perturbation is that you can like find the grounded states exactly, like they're closed analytical form for the grounded state. And you can use them to kind of like argue or reason about this decoding task. So basically, you play the same game. You start with a state in the superposition of like some arbitrary superposition of different toric code Hamiltonian, and then turn on this perturbation, and then ask whether you can recover the original state by just measuring a stabilizer and applying feedback. So if you now, like, the interesting result about this toric code is, first of all, if you just do minimum weight perfect matching, you wouldn't be able, you will get a threshold, but you wouldn't get the threshold, like, you cannot correct up to the condensed matter phase boundary. The error correction threshold happens inside the phase. But if you kind of do it, kind of like apply a more clever decoder, which we call it like probabilistic likelihood decoder, which is kind of like maximal likelihood decoder, but instead of choosing the maximum kind of class, you kind of probabilistically choose one of them randomly with some relevant weights. You can show that if you use this probabilistic likelihood decoder, you can still like decode up to the phase boundary. So you can, all the condensed matter type of phase is decodable. And the fidelity kind of relates to this free energy of inserting some domain wall in the 2D Ising model. But it is a clean Ising model. So if you can't compare it to the usual toric code under like bit flip noise or phase flip noise, the model, you get the fidelity there for like maximum life decoder is given by the free energy of inserting some domain wall in random Ising model. But here you get the kind of like free energy for the usual clean Ising model without any randomness. So the universal of the class would be different and stuff, but the point is that you can decode up to the phase boundary. So yeah, we find that in this example as well, that the perfect recovery is possible inside the phase. So as I said, whether this is true for more generic perturbations of this quantum, perturbations of gap quantum phase is left as an open question. But as far as these two examples kind of is concerned, what we found is this like left picture where the error correction phase extends up to the exact like gap space boundary. It could be the case that the error correction phase kind of extends only like halfway or something like that. My intuition is that this is more generic, but yeah, we didn't really explore that direction in this work. I think it's an interesting question to try to answer. So this is the first part. And then the second part, this is kind of when the decoder knows about the adiabatic path the system has taken. Let me just briefly talk about the second part and then wrap up the talk. So when you don't know the adiabatic path, because we don't like kind of restrict the decoder. So we are allowing the second part. We are allowing any type of decoder. You can apply like very non-vocal, complicated unitaries. It might seem that it is easier to recover the state. So in the both examples that I talked, actually, even if you don't, like the first example, the repetition code, the decoder is just minimum weight perfect matching. So the decoder actually doesn't use any information about G. So it is clear that in this random in this repetition code example, or like transverse field Ising chain example, even if you don't know about the adiabatic path, you can still like recover up to the phase boundary because the decoder doesn't use any information about the adiabatic path. In the second example, the toric example, the decoder actually uses the information about the beta where you end up. In the same way that the maximum likelihood decoder in the usual toric code uses the information about the like probability of error. So if you don't, if you just, as I said, if you just apply minimal imperfect matching, you cannot correct up to the phase. But it turns out that even if I don't know beta, by just measuring the assemblizers of the toric code, I can find the value of beta because like kind of I can basically measure the expectation value of the expectation value of these star operators are a function of beta, is a function of beta. So if I, when I measure the assemblizers of the toric code, I can infer the value of beta and then the decoder can use that value to decode. So even in the toric code example, although the decoder uses the value of beta, that value can be inferred from a stabilizer measurement. So even here, for like, even if you don't know the phase boundary, you can always correct up to the phase boundary. Sorry, if you don't know the adiabatic path, you can still correct up to the phase boundary. But in general, we kind of construct, in general, this is not true, and we have a counterexample for that. And the counterexample is very simple. Like, by counterexample, I mean when there is no way you can correct up to the phase boundary if you don't know about the adiabatic path. And the counterexample is very simple. So you can, this H0, let's just be the ZI, ZI plus one, the usual clean Ising model or repetition code. And then the perturbation we consider is that, let's say this, or the phase diagram considers that, let's say you rotate every qubit in the X direction with some value of theta. So first of all, this is a symmetric perturbation. So it's kind of keeps you in the phase, and you can show that this is also a local perturbation. Like if you expand these exponentials in one plus like cosine theta over two times x, you can show that this is a local perturbation to H zero. But basically, and because it's just a UHU dagger, the energy spectrum of this Hamiltonian is the same as H zero. So there is no phase transition. Like the gap remains always open, remains always open, no matter what theta is. So you don't have any phase transition, but you can show that like if like somebody turns on theta from zero to some value that you don't know, in general, you cannot be sure to, you are not able to recover the original state, mainly because like if theta is equal to pi, or 2 pi, you can apply a logical gate basically by just tuning theta from 0 to 2 pi. And if you can apply a logical gate by this adiabatic evolution, there is no way that any decoder can recover that because a logical gate doesn't look like an error. There is no way like you can decide whether this logical gate happened or not. So there's this simple example that shows the error correction threshold doesn't necessarily coincide with the phase boundary threshold. And here, for example, in this example, you don't have any phase boundary, but you have a error correction threshold. And you can show that like if like theta is less than pi over two, if you are like, if you, so basically, if you don't know what theta is, like this, where this adiabatic evolution took you, but if you are just, if it is promised that theta is less than pi over two or minus pi over two and less than pi over two, then you can always kind of reverse this adiabatic channel. But apart, but like if you're outside that interval, you cannot. And you can show that if like the state is entangled to something else, that entanglement is preserved for theta between minus pi over two and pi over two, and it will be destroyed if it is outside that. And then, yeah, we kind of like find, kind of like look at, in some sense, the coherent information and find this couple of conditions that tells us whether there is an earthquake in phase or not. You can think of them as the nil-Lochham condition. Like the first condition, so lambda and lambda prime are like 2 points in the phase space, and phi I and I prime are like two, like the image of two orthogonal logical states of the code. So phi I prime of zero is one logical state, and phi I of zero is another logical state. So the first condition says this adiabatic evolution shouldn't really connect two different logical states. So basically, you want this overlap to be exponentially small in system size. And the second one says that, like, overlap with itself. If you look at the state and it's overlap with itself, again, this overlap shouldn't depend on the logical information. So if you compute this overlap for a state I and a state I prime, the difference should be exponentially small in the system size. So if there is a neighborhood that these two conditions are satisfied, you can always recover the original state after this adiabatic noise channel happens. So it has some interesting connection to this, like Berry connections and stuff, because like first we need to show that this doesn't, the effect of the unitary apply doesn't depend on the path you take. It only depends on the endpoints. And to that, you need to kind of know something about the adiabatic, about the Berry curvature inside the phase. But anyway, so we using these two conditions, we kind of argue that if you have for any symmetric breaking phase and zero form SPT phase of matter, there is at least a neighborhood around the fixed point Hamiltonian where this unknown adiabatic evolution can be reversed. These conditions are not tight for sure. So like it cannot be, it, we know that they are not tight. So, but they give you some threshold inside the phase. Sorry, there was a question.
So I wanted to ask about this phase diagram. So the failure of the condition that you mentioned on the previous slide, can I maybe interpret as saying that when I do the red path plus the green path, then actually there is some point in the center which is not in the same phase. So that path is not contractible, and that is why the logical operation is being performed on the code space.
Exactly. I mean, in some sense, yes, and in some sense, no. It's a very interesting point. So first of all, if I look at this Hamiltonian, like for any theta, you are in the same phase. Like if the gap of this Hamiltonian never closes, so you are always in the phase, in the same phase. So every point in this thing is inside the phase. But it is true if you look at this. So this is kind of like a periodic Hamiltonian. So it actually lives on a circle, and I think that's what you mean exactly. And in that sense, yeah, like the circle has a hole inside it. So if you just, you cannot really like take back the state back, like contract the kind of path to the zero because of this hole inside the circle. And I think it is, as you said, and that's a very interesting point. It is true that I think if there is no hole or nothing like that happening inside the phase diagram, I think it is true that you can recover up to the phase boundary. But yeah, again, this is something we leave open for the future work or for the future generation to consider. But yeah, I think that's an interesting point. And then I think that kind of is crucial in determining whether this adiabatic noise channel can be kind of reversed or not. And yeah, exactly, in the example that it cannot, it is because there is a hole in the phase diagram in some sense. So yeah, and then there's this, as I said, there's this conditions and yeah, we kind of, based on those, we argue that for this zero form SPTs and symmetric breaking phase, at least there's always this neighborhood around the fixed point that you can recover this state. And we also have like, the interesting thing is that like, because of this orthogonality catastrophe in condensed matter, if these conditions are more or less always satisfied because these are like grounded states of like different perturbations and like kind of the orthogonal catastrophe kind of tells you these overlaps are always exponentially small. Which means this adiabatic evolutions usually can be always recovered, but on the kind of like tricky part is that you want this to be, these conditions to be satisfied like uniformly in lambda. So when lambda prime is are like infinitesimally close to lambda, then the cat you cannot use orthogonality catastrophe, and that's where these things becomes kind of tricky. But if you are kind of promise that this adiabatic evolution only takes two in like its sparse points in the phase diagram, these conditions are just satisfied just based on the orthogonality catastrophe, and like you can always recover them. But if like kind of you can go anywhere in the phase diagram, it's no longer trivial whether these conditions can be satisfied. So that's I think all I wanted to talk about. And like just as a summary, so I think one contribution of this work is basically just setting up the problem, like making this, trying to make a formalize the notion that a relation between the gap phase and a kind of error correction. And we do that by introducing this adiabatic noise channels. We consider two different scenarios when whether the adiabatic evolution that happens is known to the decoder or not. And for each of them, we have some result. And yeah, as I said, we kind of also drive some sort of Nimbleff-Fleming conditions for like to kind of tells you when this unknown adiabatic evolution can be recovered. And I think they are kind of the main results of this one. There are some like details that are also interesting. Like if you're more interested, there are some other results in the paper that are kind of not relevant for the big picture, but they are interesting by themselves. And yeah, with that, I thank you for listening. And this is the archive and data part.
Thanks, Ali. Yeah, are there any further questions?
Yeah, one more like naive question. So you drew the correction threshold to be enclosed by the actual like condensed matter phase boundary. Is that always a requirement, or would it be the other way around?
Like, could it be outside the phase boundary? Again, no, especially if you are in the, if you don't know the adiabatic path. And the reason is basically, as I said, like if you're outside this phase, the degenerate grounded states become non-degenerate. And when they become non-degenerate, it means under this adiabatic noise, you will, adiabatic evolution, you always will acquire some relative phase between different grounded states. And that relative phase is a logical operation. And that relative phase could be basically, if you have like unknown random adiabatic evolution, that relative phase is some random phase. And in some sense, so it's like just going adiabatically outside the phase, that by itself kind of like randomizes the relative phase. So it dephases the any coherence you have inside the in the coded space. So it is guaranteed that you cannot do that outside the gap phase. So it kind of it always should be inside the phase. And I think the same is true even if you know the phase, the path. I mean, if you know the path and you restrict to the stabilizer measurement, the same power remains true. So yeah, I think in general it is always inside the phase. Whether it is, so the question is whether it extends to the phase boundary or it happens somewhere inside the phase. But yeah, that's a good question. Thanks.
I have two short questions.
Go ahead.
If you go to H theta, the definition of H of theta, the Hamiltonian, okay. It's a unitary rotation of all the spins
exactly
to an angle theta. So in some sense, it's a kind of simple adiabatic rotation where you
exactly
preserve strum. And orthogonality catastrophe is kind of trivial because each state spin rotates a little bit. So there will be a small factor less than 1 to the power of n. So exactly. I think you recognize that this is a unitary rotation. You can reverse the adiabatic noise by collectively operating on all the qubits in this particular
exactly
case. Okay. So the second comment is, there's a very early work by Claudio Shaman, who studied thoracoid Hamiltonian. And he pointed out that any finite temperature, there will be pairs of electric charges and magnetic charges produce problem. So can you overcome, will you think about thermal noise also as adiabatic perturbation, or what is the way to handle Shaman's complaint?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. So about the first comment, that's true. You can always recover that by just rotating them back. But that's the point. To do that, you need to know theta. So you need to know how much rotation you need to apply to turn them back. In that sense, if you know theta, then to make the statement non-trivial, we should consider restricting the stabilizers, where you just restrict it to measuring the stabilizer and applying feedback. But that's also that happens to be also possible, so it doesn't complicate itself. But the interesting thing happens when you don't know theta. So the theta could be some random value. So you no longer can just recover the exact state by just applying the rotation, because you don't know how much you need to rotate. And it happens that if this theta could be anything bigger than pi over 2, if it is randomly between 0 and pi, then you cannot really recover. You can see that the entanglement between the logical state and some preference state would be lost. About the second question, the Shaman paper, yeah, that's a very interesting point. We know that the 2D toroid is not robust, it's not a good quantum memory in the sense that if you have thermal instability, it will erase the state. But the thermal kind of stability is a very kind of more aggressive type of stability than the adiabatic stability, adiabatic noise, because it decoheres things much faster. Our result doesn't really apply there. So it's very about quantum. So that's why in the kind of the title, we have the stability of quantum, gapped quantum phases of matter. So we are not talking about thermal phases of matter. It is all zero temperature. All the results are just about zero temperature. When you have non-zero temperature, the things becomes much more noisy and messy. But yeah, that's a very good question. One can ask now, if I look at, let's say, 4D toroid code where it has a non-zero, thermal threshold, what happens there if I add some adiabatic perturbation there as well? But yeah, we haven't considered that in this work.
Ali, one question about the without the recovery without knowledge of the adiabatic path. So mm-hmm. you give this an example where if you just flip everything together, then there's a logical operation and you cannot recover it. But is this specific to that particular angle or particular form of adiabatic path? I mean, I'm a bit surprised that suppose I take a generic adiabatic path, can I not find an example, can I not find a particular perturbation along that path for which there is also a logical operation and you cannot recover it?
You mean in generic case?
Yeah.
Maybe there is, so my guess is that if you look at this simple phase diagrams, where there is no hole near the fixed point, I think the point is that, so based on this kind of two conditions, we know that if you always limit yourself to close enough neighborhoods of the fixed point, usually no, you cannot find adiabatic paths that apply a logical operation. So the point is in the rotation is that you have this kind of closed adiabatic loop or closed path of adiabatic evolution which apply this logical operation. But if you are kind of restricted to close neighborhoods of the fixed point, every kind of closed adiabatic path would apply a trivial logical kind of operation. So that wouldn't happen. That's why it is always possible, if you restrict yourself to finite neighborhoods of the fixed point, small enough but finite neighborhoods of a fixed point, usually these adiabatic evolutions don't apply this logical operation. I think you need some sort of non-trivial hole or something in the phase diagram for that to happen. It doesn't happen generically. But yeah, I mean, the rotation is kind of a simple example that we can just, the minimalistic example that this happens. Of course, probably there are other examples where this happens. And one example, another way that this happens is basically just when you have anions and you braid them. That's another example where this non-trivial logical operation. I mean, the whole point, the whole point of this topological quantum computation is how you can apply logical gates by doing adiabatic evolution. So those are examples where the adiabatic noise cannot be recovered because the adiabatic noise can apply logical information, logical operations. So in general, if the adiabatic evolution can apply logical information, I think that's basically where this recovery fails. But I think you need some non-trivial setup for that. I don't think that happens generically.
And the existence of non-recoverability, is it saying that any local channel, there is no like two-way connectivity between with a local channel in the same
place? I think it is a little bit different from those notions. When you talk about this two-way connectivity between mixed states, I think preserving external entanglement or coherent information is not important. You want to keep the mixed state, like come back to the mixed state from one way to another. So I don't think that's specifically important here, but I'm not completely sure. It might be related to that.
Okay, are there any more questions? Well, if not, let's thank Ali again for the wonderful talk.